This episode of Current Geek brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for the right payments API, check out the Braintree V.0 SDK. With one simple integration, your customers get every way to pay. To learn more and to try it out in the sandbox, go to braintreepayments.com/currentgeek.
I have
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott. That's Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Scott. I'm Tom.
Hi. It's fancy meeting you here.
It's so fancy.
It is so fancy. You're so fancy, but I already
you
know.
You already know.
Yeah, there you go. We're so with it.
We're so hip. You know, when Scott and I were listening to Zedd's latest album recently, we were talking about some EDM, and we said, boy, those guys can sling it.
They can really sling the hot, fresh
licks. Fresh tracks.
Yeah, that's it. We're here for Current Geek, and that means a guest. Our guest today, the returning, the triumphant Jenny Josephson. Hello, Jenny.
Hello.
It's fantastic having you here. How are you feeling?
This is like the best part of my week.
Oh, well, we always say that.
Perfect way.
Yeah.
To
I stole
end
it from Tom.
Well, good. We won't just assume you're just saying that. We think you believe it. It's fine.
It's fine.
Jenny Josephson, of course, the DTNS producer. Don't forget that. Big time back behind the scenes business going on over there. The host or co-host of Tell It Anyway over at tellitanyway.com. And she's a news grabber for TMS. That's your official title, by the way.
I love that title.
News That's grabber. Awesome. Grabber of news.
I just imagine her in a room full of those old AP machines that are like spitting out reams of paper, and she's just ripping them and running through and grabbing them.
I love those things. Man, we're nostalgic about a decade we didn't live in, aren't we?
Multiple
we got
decades.
A nip slip on the red carpet and 405 stat.
That's pretty good. We'll get to more of that later, I'm sure. But instead of spending all day talking about news tickers and the best decades that we never lived in, let's get into the news.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
More evidence right there. Tom, what do we have?
Well, our first story comes from the subreddit. And if those folks out there are going to complain about the stories on Current Geek and they don't vote in the subreddit, they can just close their traps right now. CurrentGeek.reddit.com is the place to go if you want the right to complain about what we talk about. Make your voice heard like Z Biebs did. Or if he's Canadian, perhaps it's Zedd Biebs. Sent us the welcome news that Chris Pratt, a.k.a. Star-Lord, a.k.a. Jurassic World star, having learned from the recent PR missteps of pal Chris Evans and Jeremy Renner, has pre-apologized for anything offensive he might say or do on his upcoming worldwide press junket for Jurassic World. Shall I read you what he wrote?
Yeah, I'm very curious how this is worded.
All right, here's what Chris Pratt wrote.
All right.
I want to make a heartfelt apology for whatever it is I end up accidentally saying during the forthcoming Jurassic World press tour. I fully regret what I accidentally will have said in the upcoming foreign and domestic interview or interviews. Pratt went on to explain that he will probably just be trying to entertain the crew in a stuffy junket room and dubbed his flub Jurassic Gate already. Mm. You can read the rest of the long pre-apology on his Facebook page, but this is likely with this move, likely that Chris Pratt will probably be one of our favorite movie stars for a long time.
Yeah, probably. It's so self-aware and he's so in the system, but not in the system yet. And all my worries about peak Pratt are probably overblown because I do really like this attitude. I like.
Well, now that we can frack for shale Pratt.
Yeah.
It's pushed peak Pratt off a little bit.
Well, don't forget about solar. Jenny, what do you think about Chris Pratt and his current goings on?
I mean, in the ongoing battle of like which Chris is going to win ultimate number one all-time movie Chris, Chris Pratt is currently killing it. I mean, Chris Evans was up there, but then he revealed that he's like susceptible to the dark side of the bro force. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot to say about Chris Pine a little bit later, but like Pratt is just like he's not afraid of social media. He has an adorable wife that he clearly adores. He had a surprise Marvel blockbuster. He's not afraid to be pudgy and funny. And like he, did you see the video where he taught his kid to say the Pledge of Allegiance on their front porch?
Yes.
I wept.
It was adorable.
I wept.
It was adorable. It was really well done. And this all from a guy who I would argue, if you were going purely on the first season of Parks and Recreation, you went, I don't know that we'll see him hang around very long. Like it was not a very good role. It was kind of weird. It didn't fit. I thought it was funky. And I remember at the time going, I don't know this guy. We're done. But this is short lived. Season two will not feature the goings on of this character. And I could not have been more wrong. And I don't know who's to credit for that. Probably his performance combined with some good writing. But he ended up just taking off. And now he's this thing that's kind of hard to deny. And all the rumors about Indiana Jones having its shoes filled by him, which doesn't sound bad to me. You know, like there's opportunity here. But I always worry when somebody gets this big, this quick, that they're gonna peak and then we're all going to be angry about it for no reason. We're all going to resent it. Or hope that something crashes or something.
Yeah, or worse, fame really takes a hold and it becomes unbearable and they don't get to remain the people that we love so much. Because I think those two, Ferris and Pratt, are doing a pretty good job of remaining people, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. really hard when you're a blockbuster movie guy. And that's my fear. That's not that they'll peak and we'll get tired of them. It's that the system will eat them and they will not be the Paul and Joanne that I want them to be so badly. You
sure.
Know?
So you're worried about a fall from grace, essentially.
I'm worried about like a fall from humanity.
You're worried about a Pratt fall. Is what
That's not bad.
Not bad.
That's pretty good. Anna Faris's day off? No, I don't have a good one for her. it's
Iron Will.
He's exciting, and what he's doing is exciting. And I don't, you know, and you're right. You like to hope that the people who we admire in these in Hollywood continue to be down to earth and interesting people, and they don't become weird Johnny Depp like robot men. And that's the hope here.
Now, there's more to Jurassic World than just Chris Pratt. There's also video games. Historically, video games based off of Jurassic Park franchises have existed. And Captain Kipper points out that you can get a refrigerator full of them. About 300 Super Nintendo cartridges of the Jurassic Park game up for sale on eBay for $1,500. You also get a few other formats thrown in there. A laser disc of Jurassic Park. Mm. Fridge apparently not included. So who's bidding? What do you think?
Wow. I think I like when things like this show up, right? It's kind of like... I just watched the documentary about the unearthing of all those ET cartridges out in the New Mexico desert, which turned out to be true. Although the documentary is a little bit weird. It ended with, oh, look, we found one. And then there's a warehouse full of boxes that we're to believe are full of them now. And I don't know. I'm missing.
You're an ET cartridge truther?
I'm a truther. Well, I guess, you know what? Now that you mention it, I usually hate that kind of conspiracy theorying, but I'm doing it with that movie. It just didn't show me. They showed me A through B.
ET cartridges were an inside job.
They showed me A through B, and then they jumped to Z, and I'm missing all these other letters. So I kind of just need to know what happened there. But that's a real allure to find the pop culture treasure trove. And it sort of speaks volumes about why we're so into things like Ready Player One, because it kind of refers to that kind of thing. But how much money? I don't know. You know, is this all worth? Is your childhood, Jenny, worth $1,500?
Maybe not $1,500. It would definitely have to come with like 18-year-old Twinkies to be worth that much money.
Yeah, I have one here that is, and I'm not kidding. I have a 12-year-old Twinkie.
Wow.
That I bought in like whatever, 01, 02, whatever it was. And it's still, and it's out of the package. It's not packaged. You couldn't eat it, or you could, I guess, but you'd probably die. But it's perfectly petrified in its original state. All it was exposed to normal air, sat on a desk and got forgotten about, got put in a drawer. Hard as a rock, hard as any rock I've ever held. I've banged it against things and it doesn't shatter, but it looks like an uneaten, perfectly fresh Twinkie. And I wish I could share it with you, but I'm going to put that on eBay one day and sell it.
It's Twinkie.
You should bring
McLeod.
That to Nerdtacular.
Yeah.
Like in a glass box.
Yeah.
And put it on display in a dark room with a spotlight on it. So people can like come in, put a velvet rope and come in and they could view Scott's hardened Twinkie.
That's a real euphemistic thing to say, but also, come into this room and see this light shining on my hardened Twinkie.
I could see, the easel outside with the, you know, the ornate letters. Scott's
hardened Twinkie. I don't know that it would be the draw that you might imagine, but I still think it's amazing.
I actually think that you're underestimating how much of a draw that would be. I mean, I think you could probably charge for pictures with the Twinkie.
Hey, that's not a bad idea. We've been trying to figure out ways to boost revenue at the event. Tom just solved all my problems. So thank you for that. But anyway, good luck to whoever ends up with all this stuff. It sounds like if you're a fan of any of those things, then if you're a fan of Jurassic Park, period, you're in for some fun.
Fridge not included.
Yeah.
Jeff Rose submitted this one. Dr. Garth Webb, an optometrist in British Columbia, presented research in April at a conference about an implantable eye lens that he says gives vision that's 3 times better than 20/20. So I guess that's 26 2/3.
What the heck?
I don't know how that works.
All right.
It's an 8-minute procedure that injects the folded lens into your eye where it unfolds and replaces your natural lens and has the added benefit of preventing cataracts. Dr. Webb's company, Ocumedics Bionic Lens, will test on animals first, could receive approval in Canada by 2017. Bionic eye.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I just got off the phone before this episode scheduling an appointment with an optometrist who did surgery on my eyes a year ago, and I'm having trouble with one of them, so he's going to fix it. It's the exact same procedure. You take out your old lens, you insert a replacement lens. I have this condition that I got from my dad's early cataracts. People usually don't get them until they're old, and I got them young. So they took them out, put in these fake ones. Now I'm ticked because if I'd have just waited around a little bit and gone blind for a few years,
right?
I could have waited for, I guess they could still go in and replace what I have now.
Well, and I guess, yeah, they could just put this one in instead.
Yeah.
Or even over, I think, possibly.
Yeah. I think you could probably that or swap it out. It's not like it's such a routine thing now, and both my surgeries are maybe 8 minutes long a piece. But what's interesting here is the article makes it sound like it's, elective surgery. Like this isn't something they'd order necessarily, although it sounds like it would replace.
Because anybody with 20/20 vision would still get an improvement.
Exactly. Like so no matter how good your current natural lenses are, you could in theory go get these. This is a huge step toward true human augmentation if that's truly the kind of vision you can expect. I'm a little skeptical just given my knowledge of what I have in my eyes now is actually kind of intense, cool, high-tech stuff. I don't know what makes these so much better in terms of their the potential vision of these things. There must be more to them than just here's a little thin layer of whatever. Yeah. What do you think, Jen?
I like to think that when this thing unfolds in your eye, it makes a noise that's like...
you know?
Because let's all be clear. Like, let's all be clear. With virtual reality and, like, increasing 3D movies, like, we're all going to go blind. Mm-hmm. We are all going to need bionic eyes.
Sure.
And then think about the augmented reality potential. Like if they could just prove that this is marginally safe and removable with just a, like, a... and then it's out, I'm in.
Yeah. Well, what's impressive here is what he has described, at least in this posting, is the exact same procedure that I had. So if people want to see what this would look like to have something like this done to your eye, because it is the same. Mine went in, folded, and flapped out when he let go, and the whole schmear. They're just whatever the other things that make him special, I don't know. But go to YouTube. Don't eat lunch first. Go to YouTube. Search for cataract surgery, and you will see close-ups of people getting this done. You'll be amazed how that stuff works. I mean, this is like the most modern-day 8-minute in-and-out thing ever that in the past, 100 years ago would have been thought of as witchcraft. So it's totally worth looking at if you're interested.
And years from now, after you have this new surgery,
yeah,
and you're running away from Deckard and you duck into Dr. Webb's office, he'll say, "Are you Scott Johnson? I make your eyes."
As long as
Reg Nullify pointed out the news of GoPro's spherical camera rig for VR and drones. And at Google I.O. this week, turns out GoPro is the first to make a device on Google's Jump platform for 360-degree VR capture. Google Maps will also be available offline. HBO Now is supposedly coming to Google Play yesterday, but it's not there yet. We really don't have 2.5 hours to tell you about everything that happened at Google I.O. What did you guys find impressive?
Well, what I really want to know, I guess I kind of enjoyed the whole thing. I thought there was some cool stuff on display, but what really got me was the Jump platform. It seems like the Google way of doing things, which is we're not going to invent a proprietary platform for what we think will be the dominant VR experience, and now we're going to compete directly with Oculus and everybody else. They're more like, well, what's the thing that we could do? In a lot of ways, like the VR cardboard thing. Everyone thought that was a joke at first, but it actually kind of works. And like, is a functional, cool thing. And the new one this year will support iPhones and bigger phones and all this other stuff. So it's almost like they came in and said, well, what do we need here? Well, we need to be able to give people the ability to make VR experiences. And how do they do that now? Well, it's very expensive and weird. So what if this rigging and this jump platform allowed you to take any camera and do it? And just enabling a new way to make projects and to do stuff is what I got a kick out of. I thought that was really cool. What do you think, Jenny? What was your favorite Google I.O. moment yesterday?
Mine was pretty prosaic. It was just unlimited storage for Google Photos.
Yeah.
Because I have photo fear. Like, I do fear that I'm going to lose all my photos someday because a lot of them are just on, like, old drives, mm-hmm. which seems like a terrible idea. Now the next step for me, though, is, like, I would like Google to automate scanning of old photos to Jenny scale so I don't have to hire a TaskRabbit to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the big issue. Art, now, somebody clear me up on this photos thing. I was impressed with the app in one way because I'm an iOS user, and as soon as I installed it, it immediately just screamed at me, hey, we look like the app you already use for your photo management on the phone. Almost identical, except we're going to let you store everything for free, and I think that's actually a good move. So there's a lot of familiarity and stuff. But can I just for free put all my high-resolution stuff up, or is it all, like, scaled down for free? How does that work, Tom? Do we know?
You only get a certain level of resolution for free. You have to pay if you want to do the raw storage or full resolution. In fact, raw storage isn't even really possible because they have a limit on the uploads. I think it's like 75 megabytes per upload.
Right.
But the unlimited storage will still compress your files.
So if I have a high resolution, whatever high maximum resolution JPEG my iPhone 6 will take, they'll take that, and if I want to do the paid option, they'll take that in full.
Yeah, they'll give you your full resolution. Okay, those.
But if I want to send that up, I'm just wondering what that resolution looks like. Is that printable? Is it still usable? Is it super?
It's high quality. That's what it says.
Yeah, that part bugs me a bit, but still.
My feeling about it is that I want to preserve memory. Mm-hmm. I'm scared of losing memory. Mm-hmm. And so if I can just preserve the memory moment, it doesn't work for you, Scott, as an artist, mm-hmm. because you're trying to preserve actual artwork to be printed places.
Sure,
but
sure.
I just want to make sure I don't lose anything to the accidents of the world.
Well, that's a really good point. And you know what's weirding me out just a tiny bit? Is that when I went and loaded the app, it already had a ton of photos I don't remember putting up in my Google stuff. And I think that's because, I don't know, Google's smart enough to pull it from some other thing that I had open, some Gmail-y Google Plus business or something. But it weirded me out because I opened it and suddenly it was flooded with photos that I'm like, I did not put that up here. So,
yeah, Google Plus automatically uploads your photos.
Right. Well,
this
yes.
new Photos app is really just taking that and putting it in an app on its own.
So at some point I approved that and it you started did. Doing that for my phone.
There was a pop-up on your phone that said, Google Plus would like to upload your photos. Is this okay? And you said, yes.
I wonder how many people like me thought that meant, can I upload them when you want to? Not that I'm complaining. This made my life easier, so I'm not complaining. But I'm actually really stoked about this. And, you know, more and more, I'm a big Apple guy, but more and more when people start saying, and it's unlimited storage, I go, yeah, that 5 gigs getting smaller and smaller every day, iCloud. Mm-hmm. You psychos. Anyway, I've gotten that out of my system. I feel better now. Anyway,
good. Another Jay Martin sent us this news that pop culture retailer Hot Topic has purchased GeekNet. If you're like, what? GeekNet owns ThinkGeek.
Yeah.
And they paid $122 million to be able to sell canned unicorn meat at the mall.
Wow. I don't even know what to say about that.
They don't actually sell canned unicorn.
Okay, good. Good. I didn't
just
know.
Just in case you're wondering.
I want a but Voyager's t-shirt. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. What do you think about lab-grown meat? I feel like is such a venerable part of Tom and I's interactions with podcasting. It just seems like it always comes up.
Do you want to move on to the lab grown meat?
Sorry, I thought we had. What am I thinking? I've got this.
We were talking about canned unicorn meat.
Oh, that
which is natural free range unicorn.
I'm an idiot. That's
not
a good
grown in a lab.
It's a good transition. No, here Let me say this about Hot Topic. Here's the thing I was wondering about this. There's some talk that they also purchased Spencer's Gifts at one point. Do we know if that's true at all? Because to me, that store is all. It's like a big combination of already kind of ThinkGeek stuff, kind of Target-y, and then there's a little bit of Spencer's in there.
If only there were an interconnected network of networks full of information.
While Tom is looking that up, I want to ask, where can I, will this purchase allow me to buy a life-size Chris Pine as Captain Kirk Fathead or no?
Yes, right?
Sold.
Isn't the theory that all that kind of crap will show up there? Like, if they're going to buy them, this is, has to be the play. It can't just be, oh, now we have a subsidiary that we run online that's super successful. It has to be some kind of combining, right? It does, I guess it doesn't have to be, but, you know, they're going to want to do more to beef up their retail experience. And some of that might be, look, a Han Solo carbonite blanket, whatever, you know, like that seems like a perfect place for it. I'm kind of all for this.
Spencer's Gifts is owned by Vivendi Universal.
Oh, my Lord.
And as far as I can tell, has no relation to Hot Topic.
Well, if you need
they do operate the Spirit Halloween stores, though.
All right. Well, I hate those stores. I hate stores that are dedicated to one holiday. They drive me crazy. I don't know why. It should be no problem for me, but when I walk by a Christmas store in like August, I want to
people. But what do you do all those other months? Like, what do you do?
Right.
Well, now, yeah, you're sitting there at the Arbor Day store and you're like, couldn't you just sell trees all the time? I don't get it.
When I was a kid, you went to Spencer's to get your fake vomit. Now I suppose you could
Led Zeppelin tie-dyes.
Yeah, see? And Hot Topic used to, in the 90s, Hot Topic was the place you got your punk band shirts.
Right.
It's all consolidating. So anyway, very cool.
Well, let's talk about some lab-grown meat, because you're right. That has been a thing across our various collaborations over the years. And Scott and I remember a time when lab-grown meat burgers cost $325,000 to make. Well, not anymore. The price of lab-grown meat is coming down, and researcher Mark Post thinks it now costs him about $11 or $12 to make a burger patty out of his lab-grown meat. However, Post says it'll still be 20 or 30 years before the slow process hits scale and becomes commercially viable. It just takes a lot of time. Also, he's really trying to find a process that doesn't require the blood of unborn cows.
Because it does right now, right?
Yeah,
it okay. does. Yeah, that's gross. All right, would you... Okay, Jenny, so let's get down and dirty.
Yeah.
Would you eat... If I presented to you right now, I said, hey, here is a Post burger with artificial meat. Would you eat it sight unseen, ready to go? Is this a thing you're ready for now in 2015?
Well, I would remember that time that Bill Gates drank poop water, and I would definitely eat the burger and think it was a good deal. But seriously, like... there was like one study that came out of Cornell University that found that producing 1 pound of animal protein requires 100 times more water than 1 pound of grain. And another study found it takes 1600 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of meat. So it's like, until they could prove that fake meat starts the zombie apocalypse, I'm totally cool with it.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Those are horrible statistics. Those make me sad. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And it's more. Got into a cow through some antibiotic that was fed to it and mutated. I don't know how a virus gets into an antibiotic. Just go with me. That's going to cause the zombie apocalypse, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Not my pristine fetal calf bathed lab grown meat. That's done in a clean room.
The way I look at it is I already am dubious about how my cow is treated, lived, died, moved, shipped, packed, frozen, like all those steps. I don't know what the hell's going on out there. Like there's all kinds of weirdness that could be happening. Yet I'm happy to go pick it up off a shelf at a store and feel like that's fine. Let's take that home. But I'm fine with the idea of artificial meat. If you can at least somewhat prove scientifically that, hey, there's nothing in here that's harmful to you any more than real meat, and it tastes okay. There's no stopping this. Like, I don't know who's opposed. Is anyone opposed to it? Somebody must be.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. I haven't even heard people, but I guarantee you there are people opposed to it. One is that people would say this kind of thing will cause people to continue to want natural meat as well, which will lead to the death of more animals. Other people will just go with the general, like, we don't know what it really is, what its real effects are, even though there really is no reason to suspect that it would have any different effects than actual meat, since the composition is 100% the same. So yeah, there's going to be people against it. Some people may just be against the idea of it too.
Chemtrails, unnatural creation of
sort of living tissue, like all those things I could see coming up.
Yeah, and there's obviously ethical issues with the way they do the process now, because it does require exploitation of animals. So this is not going to absolve you of animal exploitation, which is kind of one of the benefits of lab-grown meat, you would think, is like, oh, well, we don't have to exploit animals
anymore. Sure. If you're, all you're doing, though, right now is exploiting its blood and not the rest of it. In other words, if you can synthetically recreate the cow blood, then we're off to the races. It seems a little Frankenstein-y. I get it, but
okay,
I'm ready.
All right, let me run it by you then.
Okay.
Stem cell that repairs muscle tissue are taken from a cow's neck and put in containers along with fetal calf serum, the medium which will eventually switch to a non-animal source. The cells are placed onto a gel in a plastic dish where the calf serum's nutrients are reduced, triggering the cells to go into starvation mode and split into muscle cells.
Oh my gosh, that sounds so gross, but that is kind of what's happening in a cow.
Have you ever driven up the 5 in California?
Yeah, I hated it every second
I'll
of that.
I'll take the fake meat.
All right. Yeah, I'm fine with it. It seriously, these things don't really scare me. It's like,
yeah, the idea of fake meat in itself doesn't bother me.
Yeah. I just want it to taste good. There's already a lot of real meat that tastes bad.
Yeah, apparently it just tastes okay.
Yeah, it's not
kind of like a McDonald's
hamburger. Okay. All right. I'm fine with that. That's okay.
Which actually McDonald's hamburgers might be lab grown. We have no idea. We have no proof.
No.
Show me the evidence.
Chemtrails. It's all chemtrails.
Star Fury Zeta wanted us to know that famed photographer Annie Leibovitz has allowed us to know that Sandy Kirkus, Andy Serkis, will be playing a character named Supreme Leader Snoke. Note the fact that I got Supreme Leader Snoke correct, but not Andy Serkis'
right.
name. This is in the forthcoming Star Wars The Force Awakens. Leibovitz also shared a picture of Serkis in his fancy new mocap suit. And he is sitting in a very forceful supreme leader kind of way. Or should we say Sith-ing?
Oh, I get it. You're Sith-ing in a chair. I see what you did there. Snoke. It's nice to know that Lucas naming convention still lives on in the new era of Star Wars. That's great.
Yeah.
How you feel about that?
All right. Well, I'm going to move past my brief concern like yours about the name, because, yeah, there's some of these names that are coming out like Poe Dameron, and I don't know. It feels very like Lucas.
Han Solo.
Yeah.
That one passed. Yeah. That one passed.
Well, that only passed because we were young and we loved it and we didn't care. Right, but now it'd be dumb.
But what I really want to take is I just want to take a moment to acknowledge the true genius of Andy Serkis. And it's my fondest wish that I live long enough to see the 2047 Academy Awards ceremony where they finally honor him with an honorary Oscar for changing cinema as we know it. And hopefully he will accept in a mocap tuxedo. I love this guy. He's the best. He's also like a pretty wicked, funny, practical actor, too. I don't know if you ever saw 13 Going on 30.
I did, and it's one of the only rom-coms with a supernatural twist that I would ever admit to liking. I actually quite like that movie. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
It features Dr. Claw, or is that what he's called in? Yeah, he's Claw, right? Ulysses Claw, or whatever.
It's spelled funky.
Look at all this Marvel mix-up. You got him in that. You got the Hulk in that, and you have Elektra all in the same movie. In 13 going on 30. Anyway.
Now this is going to make one person in the audience say spoilers, but I think, which makes it not a spoiler because I'm just making this up, Supreme Leader Snoke must be the leader of the First Order, right?
That's the theory too, right? I've heard that a few times. So
I buy that.
Yeah, I buy that too. Also,
so why do you need a CG character? What race is this?
Here's why I think you need it, because what they did with those two apes movies, especially the last one with Serkis in the main role, mind blowing, like emotive in ways we've never seen, like incredible stuff. So I would be, Star Wars is the movie where I would be genuinely disappointed if they didn't try to push those boundaries of mocap. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're going to have Serkis in your movie, you don't just have a minute. You use him in this way because this is his thing. He's the one that embodies it.
What if it's a crossover?
Oh, dude.
What if Supreme Leader Snoke is Caesar?
Oh, my gosh.
And he ends up being an actual, like, talking ape.
Blowing my mind.
And he's missing a hand, and he's got a claw. And, oh, my God.
He's got a ring he's got hidden in a cave someplace. Oh.
Yeah. But that's, I'm passing out.
And then he's the gay editor of a ladies' magazine.
He's all of things. All of the things. That's why you need CG. He's constantly changing exactly. his
face. I'm actually really excited about it because I'm excited about all things Star Wars related, but I just don't think that he's in this to be boring or lame. So whatever that character is, it is going to be compelling and interesting and dark and rad, and Star Wars needs that. So I'm ready.
The Snoke Andy Serkis.
Yeah.
Jenny Josephson. Hey, that's...
Hey, I know her. Yeah, I know her.
Submitted her favorite news item of the week, that DC may get Captain Kirk to be their Agent Coulson. Turns out actor Chris Pine, plays Kirk, might be getting the role of Steve Trevor in the upcoming Wonder Woman movie. Now, in the DC Comics universe, Steve Trevor has been known to act as a government liaison with teams like the Justice League and the Suicide Squad, sort of like an Agent Coulson, but deliciously soulful, funny, handsome, with thick, lustrous hair that makes one... What? Who? What, Jenny, did you write this?
I did.
Wow. That's some descriptive stuff there.
Chris Pine, speaking of movie Chris's, is my personal forever number one favorite movie Chris of all time ever.
And now it can be told.
Wow.
But I have one qualification.
That he's 4 foot. He's 4 foot one. Is that it?
No, it doesn't bother me.
Okay.
So it's Tom Cruise. Right. With the exception of Captain Kirk, I actually think that he's a character actor hiding in a movie star's face.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because Chris Pine is like that standard issue, like Jack Ryan movie hero, is so boring. Mm-hmm. But when he plays like Kirk, who's a super ham, or he's mocking the concept of a hero and Into the Woods, or even when he's like, I didn't see the movie, but I saw the trailer for Horrible Bosses 2, and he's a comedic villain. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw him in a play once where he played this dark and twisty IRA guy. Like, that's my Chris Pine forever, Kirk out.
Did you see him in Unstoppable, the last Tony yes. Scott movie? Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he was fantastic. He's 6 feet tall,
by the way.
Is he?
Yeah.
I thought he was a little shorty guy.
Unless he edited his IMDb.
Maybe.
Well, you know, his dad is Robert Pine, and yeah. he's interesting because he was in a ton of stuff, but he's most notable as the chief head of the Highway Patrol division in Chips. So yeah. he was the guy starting out all the, like, good morning, everybody. We need to be good out there today. All right, break guy.
And so his grandmother was a movie actress in the 40s, too. And I can tell you lots more about Chris Pine. So much
What's
more.
What's his favorite color, Jenny?
Me.
Oh. No, I thought you were going to say dark red matter.
I promise that if you guys put this in here, I would like just completely embarrass myself about my come clean about my absolute love of Chris Pine and all things Chris Pine. And the only thing I love more than Chris Pine is the enduring friendship between Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto.
I already thought you had a lot of things in common with my wife, but I didn't know an adoration of Chris Pine was one of Woo-hoo! Them. She feels the
yeah,
same
Kim.
Way. Yeah, yeah, she loves Chris Pine.
Sergeant Joseph Getrer.
Yeah. What if they were both in the same? What if the two Chrises joined and were in a movie together? Then what?
If three Chrises joined, I would immediately transcend this plane and go to a higher level.
Who's the other Chris? Who's the third Chris?
Evans. Oh, who Chris I still Evans. Like.
Yeah, yeah.
Not Hemsworth. No, no.
Oh
no.
God, I forgot about Hemsworth. Hemsworth.
George Kirk. Oh my gosh.
Christical Mass.
Yeah, and he played George Kirk, so it all comes back.
I cry every time I see George Kirk. I cry every time.
Yeah. Don't you wish you had a little Milner under the seat or something?
Just a little bit.
Pull that out and save the day. Yeah. So here's the... So to the point of the Wonder Woman deal, he's an interesting character in the comics.
The whole reason for this, Chris.
Yeah, Miles. The whole reason. He's a really interesting character in those comics. And while I'm not entirely familiar with all the origin stuff with Wonder Woman, I think this is a good get for that movie. So I'm excited. Look, if you ask Jenny why she's excited about Wonder Woman, she's clearly biased because she has this Chris problem. But
I will say one thing.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I want to hear you.
I will say one thing, which is the last thing I heard about the trilogy of planned Wonder Woman movies is that it was going to start in the 40s and the next movie was going to be in the 70s. And then it would take three movies to get us to the present where Justice League is going to be. So what I will actually say is what I'm super excited about is a world in which there's a Wonder Woman in the 1940s. And maybe Steve Trevor's involved, maybe he's not. But is there a chance that Wonder Woman would ever cross over with Agent Carter?
Oh, interesting. Well, no, because Agent Carter's Marvel, and I know you're saying that, but it seems like whenever that happens in comics, right? They make deals where they say, okay, sure, this one time we'll cross over Batman with Spawn or whatever.
But nobody cares about girl movies. Can't they make it happen in a girl movie? Like, if above any other, I know they will never make it happen across like.
I don't think it's about gender. I think it's about color, and by color, I mean the color of money.
Right. They're racist about green, really.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
If you ever read the amalgam stuff that happened with Marvel and DC a while back, that was really interesting. Like half Batman, half Wolverine stuff that went down. They've been willing to do it on paper, but I don't know that they'll ever do it in films. Maybe.
We'll someday. Have to see. Actually, the reason it happened in comics was they got to a point where they realized they needed to keep their stories fresh, you know, and they weren't battling each other as, you know, they realized like we could both exist in this world. Movies may get there in 10 years. They may be like, you know what? We're both making, I mean, we're already seeing the unthinkable with Sony and Fox being able to listen, and like Sony in particular, lending Spider-Man to Avengers, right?
That's a step in that direction, isn't it? So who knows?
And people are like, yeah, but that's Marvel. Yeah, but that's also Sony saying to Disney, all right, fine. Even though we have the rights, you know, we paid for the rights, we'll compromise and we'll let this happen because it's in everybody's interest. I should also point out it's Den of Geek saying Chris Pine may be in line. He hasn't gotten the job yet.
Right. Oh, right.
He has in my heart.
Whoever that is, you'll just imagine that that's him up there. Great. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's the pop quiz. Don't nobody go nowhere. This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by Braintree. Code for easy online payments. If you're building a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, guys, check out Braintree. The Braintree V.0 SDK. Makes it easy to offer multiple mobile payment types. Start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, Venmo, credit cards, more, all with a single integration. Did you know the V.0 SDK is one small snippet of code? You're all set up in less than 10 minutes. To learn more and get your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to braintreepayments.com/currentgeek. All right, we're back. Time for the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right. That means only one thing. It's time for the pop quiz. A chance for us to quiz our guest in areas of their expertise. Jenny has no idea what we're doing. Actually, I did tell her earlier, didn't I?
Jenny has no idea except that we told
her. She has an entirely good idea of what's going on. As always, if she gets an answer correct, if she gets it wrong, and Tom will score the whole thing, and we'll see how she does on the average compared to everybody else who comes on the show. Jenny, are you ready for your topic?
I'm nervous.
You shouldn't be, because this is an area I know you love. It's a thing that you often return to, just like I do. It's my favorite book series ever. I think it's yours, too. Is that true? It is your favorite.
That's true.
It is the Dark Tower series by Stephen King. My favorites are...
so much information.
My favorites are 1, 3, 4, 6. Those are my favorites. I like them all.
My favorites are all but one.
You don't like the first one, do you?
I appreciate its simplicity. I appreciate it kicking off the world. I think it was created by a very young, very proud of himself, Stephen King. And even Stephen King will say that he was a young man when he wrote that and he should have known better on a couple of things.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't Richard Bachman during that time, though, right? For this?
No. Okay. He was like one cycle above.
Okay. Well, I love the first book, and I think I just eat up the tone of it more than I do the story of it.
Fair.
But I have that problem. Anyway, we're going to talk about that. Here are your questions. First one, the wind through the keyhole. Oh, I forgot about that. That's actually really good, too. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the wind through the keyhole is set between two books in the Dark Tower series. What parts or which ones?
Chronology. The wind through the keyhole.
Happens right between sandwiched in.
Popkin did.
There you go.
I guess I'm... Oh, the wind through the keyhole is the one with the tiger and the weird things happening. That happens...
This is the one he just recently did.
The one he just recently did that I read. It happens between, I'm gonna say... 4 and 5.
You are correct. Nicely done. Between Wizard and Glass and part 5, which is Wolves of the Kala. Both great books. Loved 4. Man, I loved 4. And all the comic books, they're kind of based on 4, or at least the early Marvel series. Also very good, if people want to check that stuff out.
What two characters go with Roland to Magus on his first mission? Very first mission.
Oh, the love of all things holy. Cuthbert.
Okay.
And Elaine.
You are correct. Nicely done.
Get 2 points for that, because really? You remember Cuthbert and Elaine?
Well, here's why. It's the comic books. What he was just talking about, I wouldn't have remembered if it weren't for those amazing graphic novels.
Yeah, you're just going to get 1.5 points.
Who was the artist in that? Jay Crap. Jay White? No, Jay
Crap.
Jay Crap. Jay Crap was amazing. I can't remember his name. I love his art. All right. How many books are there in the Dark Tower series?
Just the full books, right?
Yeah, full books.
And 7. Just in the Dark Tower series.
Yeah.
Not 7.
You are correct, but if you're, he put 8, but I think he's counting Wind Through the Keyhole, and I don't think that's considered a full.
It's
a
Wind Through the Keyhole is count. It does count.
No, I disagree.
You don't think it counts? Make your state. Make your case. Why
not? My statement is that it's an expansion. It's a novella. It's not a full novel, and Stephen King only intended it to be a really beautiful, slightly additional story to the main storyline.
Interstitial.
Does not carry the main storyline through.
All right,
I would accept that, except the official title on the book jacket is The Wind Through the Keyhole, a Dark Tower novel.
Oh, that's a good argument. I'm going to allow it.
I would go with the word of Stephen King over any publicity department.
We're going to give you publicity. This is not a publicity department. This is what was put on the book.
Who put it there?
Yeah, I don't know, but it wasn't a PR press release. This is when you go and pick the book up. This is what the book officially tells you it is.
That's a good point. The book is the messenger, isn't it?
But I also agree that Stephen King's opinion must carry weight. You're going to get 0.9 for that.
All right. This is what we play when that happens. It's like 2 at the same time. Also sometimes.
Smoke weed every day.
All right, good. Next up, what caliber bullets do Roland's sandalwood guns fire? Oh my gosh, I just want to read this book again.
I know. You know, 357 Magnum? I don't know.
45 caliber.
Yeah, I'm not good with guns.
That's all right.
You're going to get 0.1 for that because you were just a tenth of a Magnum off.
There you go. They're like swords in that book. What is the longest book in the Dark Tower series? Meaning how many, you know, by pages, we're going to say.
Oh, see, none of these are about the plot. Give me the plot. Numbers of longest of books and things. Okay. It is most likely Song of Susanna.
Which is 6, right?
Yeah.
Let me check here. That is incorrect. It is The Dark Tower, book 7.
Of course.
The Dark Tower 7. The Dark Tower. What is the name of the language Stephen King created for the gunslingers? That's very plotty.
Oh.
World buildy.
The language that they created is... They were from Gilead. So Gillies. I don't know.
Gillies. Incorrect. It is the high speech.
Now...
The high speech.
Oh.
Could have said Elvish or something. It would have been just as wrong. What fingers on Roland's hand did he lose? So what two? There's 2 fingers. I'll give you that hint.
The thumb and the one right next to the thumb.
You are incorrect. It is the index and middle finger.
Oh.
No thumb.
I thought it was the ones that shoot a gun.
They are. That would be, right? Because you got your... Well, at least
she
one
get
of
a
them.
Half point. She got one of them right.
Yeah, because she had to be a lefty the whole rest of the time.
Except the one next to the thumb, which is the index.
And it was a big fat crab thing.
Right, the lobstrosity. No, it was a lobstrosity.
Lobstrosity.
Yeah.
Oh man, the drawings, the illustrations I used to have for that freaked me out when that book came out.
Yeah.
So weird. All right, final question: how many floors are there in the Dark Tower? And there is a number, and there are a lot of them.
Water floor.
Did a chick.
Highlight floor.
Data jump. 19,000.
19,000 is incorrect. It is 600. 600.
That has nothing to do with the number 19. Come on, Stephen King.
It probably divides. Let's see. Let's try this real quick. So if you take.
You're getting 2/3 of a point for that.
600 divided by 19.
There's 31.57894. Yeah, there's nothing.
Come on. Come
nothing,
on, man.
Nothing there, man. All
come
right.
On, Stephen King.
Tom, add them up. How'd we do? How'd she do?
All right. With a total of 4.66666666666666666666667. We have a winner.
Wow. You really did. I thought for a minute you were on repeat, like literally Skype was jacking up. That was impressive.
It is a precise measurement.
That's very cool. All right. Well, that leads
us. I
got
to read the books again.
Yeah, me too. I got to get on it. Oh, I love that series. And you know what? The George Goodell audiobooks. Oh, man. They're so good.
So good. Totally agree.
So good, that guy. All right. Here's this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
We got a couple of things in forecast. This used to be a show. Now it's a segment where we predict the future, sometimes pop culture related, sometimes tech, sometimes whatever. I threw one in here that is small, and then Jenny's got something too, so I'm just going to throw this out there. David Letterman, who I've been thinking a lot about. Oh, no, someone else wrote this. Who wrote this? This wasn't
Jenny.
Mine. Oh, Jenny wrote this. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm thinking of something else I did for another show about David Letterman. It's all been David Letterman and Fury Road for me lately. Like all
and that's how we're finishing the show, folks.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, Jenny says David Letterman will announce a deal for an original web series in less than 6 months. Explain what you mean by that, because he strikes me as the kind of guy that was happy to let Worldwide Pants make things and do production, but he looks like he wants to go sleep.
Yes, and it will take him exactly 6 months to go bird watching and hang out with Harry and go on a really nice long 3-month vacation, and then that guy is going to start to miss the applause and miss using his very sharp, very nice brain. I think that the rigors of doing an hour show and two on Thursdays every day for 18,000 episodes or whatever it is was a lot, but I think he is going to miss doing what he does, and they're already I absolutely guarantee that people are already pitching him. You can have anything you want on any platform you want, Netflix, Hulu, whatever you want. It can be occasional. We just want you creating more stuff.
So what will the okay, so let's just take a quick guess about the content. I could see him doing some of the stuff that used to just be so funny, like his, you know, working the mic at the Taco Bell, or
well, there's where I think this is going, right? David Letterman never enjoyed interviewing celebrities. Yeah. He never really wanted to be a talk show host, which is one of his brilliances, is that he was subverting the typical talk show host model because of that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very notable that one of the things he did on his final episode was replay the Taco Bell bit, because I think he's pointing out, maybe subconsciously, that that's what he liked doing.
Yeah.
And I would guess that if we see what Jenny's talking about, and I think she's right, whether it's 6 months or not, within a year, we see this. It's Dave just out being Dave with regular people, because that's what he really loves.
Yeah. And he was so great at it. The stuff with the kids that they showed in that final episode was just so emblematic of how funny he could be in these in those situations. And so many of his come afters have done similar stuff, and Conan's at his funniest when he's doing things like that, in my opinion. So it would be, I think that would be really cool. But let me half empty your prediction real quick. Okay. What if instead of all of that, Netflix gives him a deal to make like an Indy 500 documentary?
Yeah, that could happen.
Lame.
But I don't think one rules out the other. And the only other thing I'll add is, I don't know if you knew this, but like many comedians of his generation, David Letterman was a huge fan of Bob and Ray, which was this amazing comedic duo of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And, you know, they were wordsmiths. They did radio sketch. They did all this stuff. And he loved that stuff. It was wordplay. It was using the mind. And it reminds me a lot of what you guys do on TMS, just that epic back and forth, really tight stuff. And I have a feeling that whatever he does is going to be more like radio drama in the way that it just focuses on the word than it is him going out and doing things. Cause I think he may be a little bit too tired to do that.
Yeah. I mean, he's what, he's not quite 70, 66 or something. 67.
Yeah. That guy wants a microphone and some great copy.
Yeah, I don't know. I really like your idea that he would go on and do something else, though, because I was such a huge fan and still am. And the rabbit holes I've gone down on YouTube in the last week have been just epic.
Well, and if you read all these articles, you know, the New York Times article interviewing him, he is cagey about what he's going to do next, because I don't think he really has decided. But you get the sense he's going to do something. He's not sitting there saying, "Oh no, this is I'm done. I'm tired. I'm you know." And you've seen people retire who are like that. I feel like Walter Cronkite, I want to say, was very. You could tell very much that he's like, "I'm done."
This Carson,
even better, right? Carson was like, "I am done. This is I'm not doing it anymore." And Letterman doesn't have that definitive tone. When he's like, well, I'm just, you know, I'm going to enjoy my life and do some things. And, you know, he's very much leaving that door open that he's going to do something else.
Yeah. And that's good because more Letterman's good Letterman. I have no problem with that.
And he's only in his 60s, which these days is, you know, you've got a good 10, 20 years left.
If he gets his own version of like riding in cars with getting coffee with comedians in cars or whatever Jerry Seinfeld's show is called.
Oh, my Lord.
Whatever his version of that, his most authentic thing he wants to do, it's going to be amazing.
It would be now you.
It
got
will
me.
Be yeah. something like that. I guarantee it will be him out and about talking with real people. Maybe in a studio talking with real, but that's where he loved Stupid Petricks. He loved having the kids on. He loved going out and like just the Taco Bell thing, emblematic. Like I said, being with real people. That's why he had all of the the deli guy. On the show, he loved that. I think he'll embrace that.
Yeah, I hope so. You just talking about it has me to a place where I will be sorely disappointed if we don't get something like that. That would be wonderful, though. So bring it on.
I just hope he does it and it's enjoyable.
Yeah.
Because really, the problem for me, I grew up, and I haven't mentioned this either, but I grew up taping David Letterman on. I still have VHS tapes right down there of David Letterman that I recorded because I was at work. Past the time that he would be on, I would be working till midnight and I'd get home and I'd watch David Letterman when I got home because mm-hmm. I just thought he was brilliant in the 80s. And of course, the last 5-10 years, I watch his show and I'm like, it reminds me why I liked Dave, but it didn't feel like he was doing his best. Mm-hmm. And I don't want that to happen in whatever he does.
Well, now that
I'm sure he doesn't either.
No, and when he announced his retirement, he was very upfront about saying, like out loud to the audience, my heart has not been in it for the last however many years. So like you probably can tell. And you could tell. But man, I went one step further in the 80s. I watched it live, put a tape recorder up next to my TV, recorded audio from the entire thing. And then would go to school the next day, put on my Walkman, and I would listen to it again like 5 times that day, like some kind of psycho. And I mean, it was punk rock for talk shows.
Yeah.
It just changed everything. And so
it was at the time.
We haven't had a chance to really blow that out on this show, but he's so important to a lot of the things I do now. And it's amazing. So if he could come back and bring that little bit of glory back in some small way, I would be all in. Jenny, you also wrote something down here about Hulu will win the bidding war over the complete Late Show archive. That would be cool.
Yep, that's a lot of residuals for the Josephson Flanagan family.
Would be, wouldn't it?
Sorry. Well, and Worldwide Pants owns the catalog, right? Not CBS.
Yes, yep.
So they could do what they want. That's a good point. And I was going to ask somebody earlier this week, I was trying to find out, do they even do that? Like, can you get old talk shows? It seems like a thing you don't archive and repeat as much.
What I read was that they haven't yet, they have not yet begun to digitize, but that they have them. Mm-hmm. But it's a huge process to get them up.
Okay. Well, the key for that is people don't generally want to watch full old talk shows. They're full of a lot of irrelevant things because they are meant to be consumed that night.
Yeah.
And so the key is figuring out how to properly package them so that they are compelling. Like, you know, Dave's funniest moments or all the Stupid Petricks and things like that. That's what I'm guessing. Yeah. Hulu or whoever gets these will do.
I would buy an entire collection that is nothing but all of Jack Hanna's appearances on the show.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I just watched that. I have been doing that. Any of those episodes available to me this last week, I've just put them on queue and watched every single one of those things because they're brilliant. Anyway, exciting stuff. Jenny, thank you for your predictions. Let's hope they all come true. We have a quick email. It goes like this. Dear people of Nerd. Didn't get a name on this, by the way. Scott, you tweeted the main reason you like Fury Road today. Will you expand on that thought? I assume
he means this one. Let me pull up the tweet. He or she means this one. Here we go. I said, I'll give you the exact words, and it was this. Oh, I tweet too much. Come on, Scott. There we go. I said, I think, this was about 2 hours ago, I said, I think I figured out why I love Fury Road so much. Everything went against type. That's hard and brave and risky. I really admire it. What I mean by that is, what I walked away from Fury Road with the most was, and why I loved it the most, I think, is because everything was not what I expected or was better than I could have predicted or showed me things I've never seen before. And when you can do all three of those things for me in for $8.50 in a nice seat in a movie theater, you're really doing something in 2015. It's hard to be surprised anymore. And they go against type across the board. They, you know, while you could argue that Mad Max's character was always a little bit aloof and did not want to be involved in the mess he was in, he's our protagonist, but he's a unwilling participant in a lot of cases. That's consistent, I suppose, but I didn't expect them to do that again, and they did. I didn't expect these incredibly strong, interesting female characters who, in typical Hollywood fashion, would have been either, you know, the victimization of them would have been key to you know, prying sympathy out of me or something, and instead they created just a very different vision of that, and that really got me. And then everything else about it, just who's the bad guy, who are the good guys, and how they're just not what I expected. Just everything plays against type, which is the safe thing to do. The safe thing is to play on tropes and do stuff that everybody else does and just please the crowd with what has already worked. And they decided to go totally different ways with that. So to answer your question, that's why I think it worked for me, or worked for me so well, is it just didn't feel like anything I'd ever seen before, including Mad Max movies. Jenny, you like this movie a lot, right? What happened with you there?
Do you? I ginned up a little bit of a praise rant. Mm. May I indulge?
Oh my gosh, yes, Tom. We loved
it. Sort of like the Ultron thing, but a little more positive.
We loved that. People wrote in about that like crazy. So please, all right. Go ahead.
So I'm going here. The rant beginneth now.
All right.
So all right, I agree with you, Scott. All the reasons why you said, I absolutely agree. Tom and I talked about it. We agree about so much of what we loved about this movie. But there's one thing in particular that was so important that I wanted to bring up. So Matt has spent the last 10 years writing movies and TV scripts, and he always is on the lookout for something that he likes to call Garthok the Immolator Syndrome, which he developed after watching the first Hellboy movie, which is, that's when a movie wants you to know all about Garthok and his history and how he comes from a long line of immolators, including his cousin Gertrude. They both get their power from the great flame of Immolatoria. And it basically means, like, watch out. Don't drown in your own dark Norse pool of mythology. Mm. And a good way to test if your movie has Garthok the Immolator Syndrome is to see how many words it takes to describe the movie's plot and how many it takes to describe the character's arc, like how they change and grow. So, if you apply this test to Fury Road, the whole plot can be summed up in 2 words. Now, cover your ears for 20 seconds if you haven't seen the movie, starting now. The entire plot of Mad Max Fury Road can be summed up as flee, return. The entire character journey of the protagonist can be summed up with 4 words. No trust, some trust. Now, I dare you guys to find a movie that can be described so completely in 6 words. If you the genius of it is, if you do that, you leave all this room, 6-word plot and character, for crazy amazing visuals, mood, tone, style, and the doof warrior. Now, obviously, this doesn't work for every movie, because the only way to sum up Pulp Fiction in 6 words is Quentin Tarantino, he's nuts, but brilliant. But the Garthok test is really good for movies that used to be comic books, because I bet if you tried, you could sum up Captain America Winter Soldier, which I think is the best standalone Earthbound Marvel movie, in less than 10 words.
Totally
right?
Agree. Totally agree. Yep.
Right. And I think you could just squeeze in the first Avengers movie. But if you tried it with Age of Ultron, the Infinity Stones alone would take 20 words, right? And I've seen some people that were upset that there was too little character development in Mad Max Fury Road. And I could see that, especially as someone who thought that those vintage Joss Whedon character moments were the saving grace of Ultron. But I didn't spend a lot of time filling in the backstory after seeing Ultron, because I already knew it. And I didn't spend a lot of time worrying what was going to happen to them next, because I knew they were all in like 75 movies. But on both counts, my imagination just went soaring for Fury Road. So mostly for Ultron, I spent my time worrying about Captain America Civil War and how many characters were in it and how loud and busy it all seemed. Because after watching Max standing alone in the desert and staring out at the vast expanse, it made me wonder, this movie stood so completely on its own. Have we seen the end of the standalone Marvel movie? Has the complexity of the Marvel Cinematic Universe finally begun to fatally bog down what were to this point really fun, fast-moving movies? And I know you would say, don't worry, Kevin Feige, Marvel Cinematic Universe, they know what they're doing. So I would just end by asking you to try to describe Marvel Comics' Secret Wars plot lines in 10 words and then imagine it's a movie. Rant ended.
Wow, look at that. Now that I forgot to mention that part, and Tom and I talked about it some last week, but the ability it gave you to fill in the gaps was pretty precious for me. Like I do not need to be spoon-fed anymore, and I really hope somebody learns from this. And there are other movies that do this well. You know, I could point to a bunch of movies where a lot of the imagination comes down to you and the movie trusting you to fill it in. But this movie really emblematic of that. And it was rad. Oh, my gosh. Let's just quit everything we're doing right now and go watch it again.
Yeah.
Movie was so good. Tom, any thoughts?
Makes me thirsty.
That's what you said after you saw it on Twitter.
It did. Like, I mean, I loved it. And for most of the reasons you guys have said, not just that it, you know, defied expectations in female characters, but also in all the characters. Mm-hmm. It defied expectations in action. When you think the fight is over, it's never over. When you think he's escaped, he hasn't escaped. And yet it doesn't do it in a way that makes you weary that, you know, it does come to conclusions on, you know, on small internal pieces. And it's a really fun, well-layered movie.
I think Will Smith said it today on the Tested podcast. They figured out a way to give a stormtrooper a soul. When I was thinking about that, I thought, what is he talking about? And I realized, no, he means Nux. He means freaking the war boy turned...
He means war boy, yeah.
...helper and went from this two-dimensional, what a lovely day screamer to this really interesting thing. I don't know. It's a movie. It's just... I can't
wait. It does make me want to go to a cake shop... and buy some spray-on glitter frosting.
Yeah. So you can be chrome and shiny. Yeah, chrome and shiny. You got to get ready for the big step, Dom. What a lovely day. What a beautiful movie.
What a lovely day. And that's a throwback line, right?
Totally. Yeah.
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 The best part about that is it slips in so nicely. It's probably the only thing in the movie that ever took me out at all because it is like it was me saying, oh, right. That's from the other movie. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But it didn't take me out.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only thing that called me back. The rest of the movie, I forgot I was watching a Mad Max movie. I was just watching an adventure.
It was a reinvented vision and just in all the right ways and in none of the wrong ones. And the guy sitting behind me was wrong. He didn't like it at all.
People don't like good things, and that's okay.
That's okay. They're allowed to not like.
We're counting on those people for San Andreas.
That's right.
Yeah, that's not doing very well.
It's got 1% more on Rotten Tomatoes than Tomorrowland.
Oh, wow. Really? Yeah, you're right. 48 and 49.
Yeah,
oh,
I know. Gosh. It's right there. That's right sad. There at perfectly average.
Mad Max still sitting at 98, the highest rated movie of the year. And what are you going to do? Just go see it. That's it for feedback. If you want to leave us an email and be a part of the show, you can currentgeek@gmail.com. Jenny, huge thanks for being on today.
This makes my week.
It's so much fun to have you on. No, you're one of our favorite returners, and the fact that we work with you every day on other stuff, notwithstanding, it's just fun having you on. So thanks for being here.
If nothing else, folks, that description and review of Mad Max Fury Road should convince you that you have to go subscribe to tellitanyway.com.
Yeah, I would do that.
Because that kind of passion and entertainment and gripping story and enthusiasm is found in every episode. So go do it.
Yeah, it's a good show. I listen to it every week or whenever it's out. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's we had to skip episodes this week because I got a little under the weather. But next week, we're going to be back, and it's a great time to go catch up on older episodes at tellitanyway.com. Gives you all the information about how to subscribe. Oh my gosh, I finally caved to what Tom was insisting and got a Patreon for it.
Whoa.
Yeah. Patreon.com/JennyJ, JennyJ. So if you listen and you enjoy it, all that Patreon allows us to do, we're not going to try to do anything grand with it, is like when guests come to the office, we can pay for their parking. We can buy them a beer. We can, you know, like, this is a modest Patreon goal. Cool. Is like, let's just not, you know, let's just do a little bit for the people who come and share their stories with us.
Well, it's worth doing. Go check it out. You can also follow her on Twitter at JennyJ23. And, of course, find her work all over, permeating all over DTNS and TMS and other projects everybody have going on. So Jenny's footprint is everywhere. I think that's it. Tom, you got anything else before we go today?
Yeah. Don't forget, Nerdtacular's coming. And so if you're interested in a really good cover of a book that might not even be that bad to read, go check out my book, Citadel 32, with a cover by Scott Johnson.
Yeah, do please do that. Also, check me out tomorrow on the NVIDIA Experience Points stream at twitch.tv/NVIDIA from 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific time is when that happens. We are playing a bunch of The Witcher 3 and giving away a copy of said Witcher 3. Should be a whole lot of fun, so do check that out. That's every Saturday, 3 to 6 Pacific time at twitch.tv/NVIDIA. I think that's it. Don't forget, you can call us, leave us voicemails, 801-471-0462, Current Geek on Twitter, Scott Johnson and Ace Detect on Twitter, currentgeek.reddit.com, currentgeek.com is our website, and please, emails, more emails, whoa, that's loud, and shouldn't be so loud, currentgeek@gmail.com, that's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for Jenny. We'll see you next time. That felt good.
Hi, this is Phil back with another game-punting pick of the week from the world of crowdfunded tabletop games. So this week I'm backing Tides of Infamy by Jacob Bunting on Kickstarter. Now, Tides of Infamy is a pirate-themed fantasy board game that incorporates a lot of my favorite gameplay ideas into what looks to be a fun and very well-presented game. Players will set sail with their fleet of pirate ships, exploring the geomorphic tile map and seeking opportunities to gain victory points through trade, exploration, and combat. You can seek your fortune in distant islands, or you can just take the treasure from other players. It's up to you. Tides of Infamy uses straightforward mechanics, which can be tuned to different difficulty levels for different types of players, so you can go with a little bit more stripped down for either fast games or games with the kids, or you can get a lot more crunchy for your more involved groups. Combined with the variability of the board layout, this makes Tides a very flexible game, which should get it onto the table more often. Tides of Infamy can be supported through June 5th on Kickstarter. For more news and reviews of crowdfunded tabletop games, check us out on the Game Punting Podcast, available on iTunes or at GamePunting.com, and now at the SciCon Podcasting Network. Happy gaming!
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we review the ever-expanding world of generic top-level domains and how the new system may be a true drain on the economy and trademark rights. As recently as a few years ago, protecting a company name or a brand on the internet was not that difficult, as there were only a handful of possible GTLDs that could be used, like .com, .org, and country-specific codes like .co.uk. But ICANN started opening the opportunity to have many other words or suffixes behind the .dot and website addresses, and that has had a profound effect on the way companies protect their brands online. For companies who want to buy up the rights to their name in a new GTLD, like the .sucks domain that is about to go live, they have to pay $2,500 in an initial sunrise period, or else the domain name could be bought later on the open market for around $10. That price disparity, and the ever-growing number of different GTLDs, makes it economically infeasible for most companies to lock down every potential domain name. When .xxx was opened as one of the first new GTLDs, a high number of companies paid this extra money to prevent potential porn knockoffs using their brands. But with the seemingly similar .sucks domain this year, many companies have just given up trying to control everything. But that raises interesting questions under some national trademark laws. One of the obligations for trademark owners in the U.S. is to keep the mark in commerce and also to police others using the mark. If sufficient care is not taken to object to potential infringers over time, the trademark owner is assumed to have approved this type of competing use. If that happens enough, the trademark may become diluted enough to not really reliably identify the source of goods or services anymore, and that's where a trademark gets invalidated. So is this continued expansion of possible domain names actually providing any value anymore, or is it just creating a cyber-squatting haven that becomes a monetary drain and a nuisance for companies who need to protect and enforce their most valuable trademarks? It seems the scales are tilting towards the latter, unfortunately. The bottom line is, just like with all new areas or expansions related to IP law, new domain names likely need some form of regulation to avoid this becoming a Napster-level cesspool, filled with nothing but brand trolls, shameless profiteers, and increased unnecessary litigation. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions or segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.